From Susan G. Komen, this is Real Pink, a podcast exploring real stories, struggles, and triumphs related to breast cancer. We're taking the conversation from the doctor's office to your living room. This is Real Talk, a podcast conversation where we're digging deep into breast cancer and the realities patients and survivors face every day. We're talking openly and honestly about just how difficult breast cancer can be, from being diagnosed to selecting the right treatment plan to living day-to-day with metastatic breast cancer and life after treatment ends. In today's episode, we're encouraging everyone to take a break. A breast cancer diagnosis and treatment and life thereafter can be exhausting. All the appointments and procedures and follow-ups and bills on top of the emotional and physical challenges of cancer is overwhelming. Sam Lazar Riviello is a stage 2 breast cancer survivor who learned how to accept help and support from others during her diagnosis and treatment. Through the outpouring of love from those around her, she could focus on overcoming cancer. Esther Tambi and her sister Alicia co-founded Fight Through Flights, an organization that provides free wellness retreats and travel experiences for Black women living with breast cancer. Their goal is to improve the wellness and mental health of Black women who are impacted by this disease. Ladies, thank you for being here today to remind us all that it's important to take a break. Life can give us more than we're ready for and able to take on, but taking a break is one of the best things we can do for ourselves, our health, and our well-being. So, Sam, let's start with you. I'd like for you to share your breast cancer story and how you learned to accept help from others. And then, Sam, when you finish, Esther, we'd love to hear your story as well.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Okay, my breast cancer story. I turned 40 and I went for my first mammogram. And it was there that I learned that I did have breast cancer. I decided to go to Memorial Sloan Kettering, MSKCC in New York. I wanted to give myself the best opportunity that I was able to give myself. And there I was diagnosed with stage 2B breast cancer. And I had to have surgery. I had 16 weeks of chemo and 30 rounds of radiation. And after that, I'm really happy to say that I have no evidence of disease. And I've gone on to have two successfully clear mammograms and ultrasounds since then. So I guess I'm 2 years out at this point now.
And Esther, what's your story?
Thank you for sharing your story, Sam. My story would be, I am not a breast cancer patient or survivor. However, me, my younger sister, we lost our older sister to breast cancer. She was stage 3 triple negative breast cancer. So for us, we started this organization, Fight Through Flights, in honor of her to uphold her legacy. But as we were, you know, one of the things that we did together was travel. A lot of our joy and family memories are through travel. But within her last year of her fight, she was still able to travel. So we wanted to be able to give that type of joy and relief to others who are also struggling with their breast cancer journey, but also realizing that for some people, you know, breast cancer happens, but their life, whether it's they've put it on hold or not, you know, that they can still continue to do the things that they once loved. So that's part of our goal of being able to rekindle that joy and relief for them.
I just wanted to say, the briefing for this podcast was the first time that I was introduced to your organization, Esther. And when I was reading it, I actually got really like emotional, just like really gripped, like I guess shook, I guess is the right word, that there was an organization out there that was doing what you were doing. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about here, but I think one of the main things that have been on my mind since my diagnosis is just the inequity of it amongst for people of color, for women of color, and just the really sad and staggering rates that that show like higher mortality rates and just yeah, it's actually quite overwhelming, as you know, and it's something that I think about on a regular basis, especially I think because I just started off by saying that I was able to select like the best cancer center that I was able to access, and I just know that my my privilege, my access, as a white woman, as someone who's financially pretty stable, and I do have this really lovely support group, and that's not something that a lot of women have. And then when the odds are already stacked against you as a woman of color, it's just really something that's constantly on my mind as a breast cancer survivor. So I really found it very emotional to read the services that you all are providing through your organization.
Thank you. Honestly, it was something that we didn't realize ourselves until we started with the organization and started to do more research and realize that, you know, all these disparities are out there. But kind of like what you said, especially being also familiar with Memorial Sloan Kettering, not everyone has access to that, right? You know, some of this care and the barriers to care is based on the zip code, you know, based on the treatment team that one can have. And for some women, it's, you know, that moment of, do I, you know, pay this bill or do, you know, there's this treatment? Or do I have the time to take a staycation or do I need to worry about the bill? So we're also within our programs, you know, it's just being able to give them that opportunity that this is for you, solely for you, free. You don't now need to worry about, you know, your mental health, self-care versus that treatment. Like, we want you to be able to take care of yourself during this process. But also, you know, for those who are going through survivorship, there might have been so much that they neglected at that time. Mm-hmm. So being able to still, you know, recognize the women that they are and what they have to offer and just have that moment for themselves as part of, you know, what comes with the programming. So it's something that we don't realize until, you know, it impacts us, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's so beautiful. Really, I'm kind of like shaking a little bit thinking about it.
Talk a little bit about what it's like asking for help, why that's taboo, and what you think are the best ways to shift away from that being a taboo thing.
I'm happy to start here just because asking for help is something that I found myself really uncomfortable doing before my diagnosis, for various reasons, the way I was brought up, et cetera, et cetera. I am like hyper independent, to a detriment. I would say there, you know, and now I'm a 42-year-old woman. And sometimes I just look back and I reflect and I say, why would you do that to yourself? Why would you try to go alone for so many different things in your life? And I am happily married. I have been with my husband. We're about to celebrate, I guess, 20 years of dating. So we've been together for a really long time. And obviously we're married, but I have two children. I have a great job. I have great friends. I have a great community. But really, it wasn't until I was faced with this diagnosis that I told myself, like, if you're not going to let people in now, you're just, I don't know what you're doing. It's like self-sabotage almost. I kind of view my cancer diagnosis as like a transformative opportunity for me for the remainder of my life. I'm calling it the second half of my life. I hope it's long and abundant, but, just to allow people to step in and shoulder the burden a little bit, I think is something that I'm really fortunate that I've been able to do. And again, like I say, I'm always hyper aware of the fact that people do this by themselves. People do this without a job that isn't as understanding as mine. People do this without the support of a co-parent or something like that. And, I struggled through my own treatment, my course of treatment, and that is with such a robust support group. And just it can be quite staggering to think about what it is like for other people who are going through a diagnosis without as much as I had, you know. And I definitely faltered a lot. I definitely had days that I wasn't feeling so hot and that I would call my mom and just like maybe think about not being here anymore. Like, it did get that heavy for me for certain times during my treatment. And that was with sort of like the best case scenario. You know, I had estrogen positive breast cancer, which I was told that it was probably one of the most treatable kind. I have a beautiful life and I still found so many hardships in it that when I think about women who are doing this alone or women who are coming from underserved communities or just for the variety of reason why things wouldn't be as, dare I say, charmed as what I have, I can't imagine doing it. I really can't.
Yeah. And I think it's even where, you know, asking for help, what does that mean for someone? So for sometimes, you know, asking for help could be a sign of weakness, feeling inferior. So in that in itself can be a personal thing that one may deal with. But even, you know, as working with just Black women in general, you know, there's that strong Black woman trope where sometimes we feel that we must do everything. Like, we're supposed to be strong. Like, we can't have that weakness. And sometimes, you know, because it's been ingrained in us for so long, like, we continue with that. But at the same time, it's like, we can only take so much on our shoulders. Like, that burden becomes stress. Stress impacts the way one's health is. You know, that diagnosis can, you know, take a toll on you in itself, but now you're adding additional stress. So personally for us, you know, our sister, she was the oldest. She was a mom. You know, she stands as the oldest sister, the oldest cousin, the oldest granddaughter, the oldest niece. So sometimes we think maybe that was just a responsibility that, you know, for her to now ask for help or show weakness may not have been, because for so long we've been used to her being that person that, you know, does it all but knows the most. So not that she didn't have support, but I think sometimes we felt, and it wasn't until like maybe after her passing, realizing like there was more things that she may have been struggling with and just didn't want to come to us to let us know that was the case. Because at the same time, you know, making sure that we're okay and everyone is okay, and this is the first time we're all dealing with this, that itself is what happens when we're just trying to take the burden of it all. But through it all, and just even with the work I do outside of the nonprofit, it's just knowing that it is okay to ask for help. It may feel awkward to ask for help, but sometimes we just have to know that we can't do this by ourselves, how to ask for help. So even if, you know, you're on the other end, whether you be a loved one, sometimes you just have to ask, like, what can we do for you? Because they may not come to you and ask for help, but it could be the little things of just that extra phone call or just showing up with things that may not, you know, whatever it may be. So I think asking for help is a hard thing for many, but showing that, like, you know, it doesn't mean that you're weak and like you're now not able to do something. Like, you still are a person with, you know, additional help. So I think it's just even just having more of these conversations and, you know, decreasing that stigma that comes with mental health and asking for help and all the things that can change the trajectory of one's diagnosis and their care.
Yeah. And when you're talking about your sister, she sounds amazing. I'm sorry for your loss. There is sort of that reminder, like, check in on your okay friends, you know, if we're going to talk about it in the mental health lens, is like a lot of things that I've learned about myself through my own diagnosis and like working with my therapist, Grace, if you're out there, thank you. Is that, sometimes like the most stressed out people are the ones that are just the most like polished and poised and pulled together. And especially when it, you know, that people are counting on you or you feel as if people are counting on you, like your sister probably felt so much love and compassion and honor and being like a caretaker and a leader for you all. Sometimes we're the ones that fall the hardest, I think, is, you know, you just pretend and you shove it down. And when you do that with your emotions and your stress, you're really, really, you're doing future you a disservice, because it comes out in so many other ways. And that's something that I've experienced, where, like I said, like I reflect back on my time when I was going through treatment. How did I do that? You know, how did I show up at work? How did I go so hard for so many different things, just because that's who I was and ingrained. And I'm grateful now that I give myself a lot more permission to just say no and put up those boundaries around me that are just self-preservation pretty much. But it's, you know, it's still an ongoing journey. Sometimes I catch myself like, what are you doing? Say no, why are you doing this? But yeah, I think you got to check in on your tough stoic friends a lot, especially when it comes to illness, because if they're like that in health, they're definitely going to be like that in sickness. So,
no, 100%. Even like I said, keeping the boundaries setting boundaries, but at the same time, there's parts of us that, you know, we're so used to helping others that we sometimes don't even want to feel like we are a burden. Because I think that's another thing that comes on. It's like, well, I don't want to be the burden. I don't want you to now worry about me. There are all these other things. But it's like, well, if your cup is not full, who's going to fill it for you? So it's just trying to, you know, knowing, just knowing what you have around you. Like, we don't want it to be that, you know, it comes to the length of a death where one talks about like, oh, what I should have done or what I could have done, where it's like, you know, there are people here. Some of us just may not know what to do because we're also experiencing it for the first time, whether it's a caregiver or a loved one. Like, it's, you know, there's a person that's impacted directly with the breast cancer diagnosis. And then you have your loved ones around you who are also impacted, but don't necessarily actually know what you're going through. Like, I could never say that I understand the day to day of what it means, or what my sister went through, or what you've gone through, right? Like, I can never say that. Like, I can be compassionate. I can have that empathy and try to be there, but I can't sit here and be like, yes, you know, today's going to be your best day and you're going to be the strongest. Like, sometimes that positive, toxic positivity doesn't also help someone either. But if we allow for someone just to be like, listen, that's not what I need right now, but I do need this, can we start having these type of conversations just to help along the way with it too?
Yeah. Something that you said about, you know, the cup being full. Another one, shout out to my girl Grace, but she tells me a lot that excellence takes energy, and you know, showing up excellently is something that's really important to me professionally and in my relationships with my friends, my family, my community. But you know, exactly how are you filling up that cup? And that's something that's just an ongoing situation for me, is just trying to find those different ways for me to recharge. But thinking about you as a caregiver, it also applies. And I think about, you know, how my husband, who was my main caregiver during the time of my treatment, how he was not looking to fill his cup, you know, and there is that duality of something that sucks just so bad, like going through breast cancer and worrying about your future and your family. And, but then also just taking a minute to like be present in the moment and find that joy where you are able to find it. I think it's really beautiful that your organization does it through travel opportunities, because, you know, you think of somebody who's sick with cancer and you think of them as someone who's like sort of bedbound or housebound or hospital bound. But the fact of the matter is I was quite mobile, and I went to work, I popped a little hat on and I kept it moving. I was out with my kids, I was out in my community. And, I think twofold. Number one, you're finding those opportunities for them to have joyful moments with their loved ones. That's huge, but also sort of normalizing people who are going through treatment, just being out in the world. Cause you know, people would just sort of look at me like ET, like, what are you doing here? Why aren't you homesick? And like, I'm busy. I got things to do, you know? And that's something that, I was really surprised about after going through my own, treatment, is how really like day to day things really didn't change that much. Aside from like the days I was feeling really poorly, but I like to tell that to people unfortunately, there are a lot of people coming my way right now with their own stories of, you know, diagnosis. And it's something that I tell them, it's like, you can be out there, you can still be doing it, you know, and that's something that you don't really think about. And so I love that you are taking it to one of the farthest extremes of like joyful presence in the world. I love that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things we also try to hone in on, that it's, you know, that breast cancer diagnosis does not necessarily define you. That doesn't necessarily put the limit to you. So like, you know, with our sister, when she was first diagnosed, you know, she was a nurse, so she worked her night shift. She did her 7 to 7, would go to the gym and then go to chemo, would still travel. So like one of the last the few trips that we did together, like we went to Napa, we did Cartagena, we went to Colombia. Like she had no fear in the world that like she was still going to still do the things that brought joy. So even when we do these trips, like whether it was the retreat or just allowing for the different staycations, it's like, well, what is it that you enjoy? Like, why can't you still do this? You know, as long as there's, you know, the medical clearance that it's okay for you to travel, it is okay for you to experience this, why would we limit it? So, you know, if there's any, you know, it might just be that thing that's needed to even bring back that self-preservation that we were talking about. Like, they might just need to even feel the sun on them, being out in nature, being by the beach, being whatever it may be. So whether that's a full-blown retreat or just having that one moment to spend in a hotel night, like a hotel room by yourself for the night, those are levels of joy that you're still worthy of and that you can still achieve while going through, you know, your treatment with breast cancer, or if you're through survivorship and once thought that you lost all of your likelihood of whatever it was prior to your diagnosis, mm-hmm. but just still trying to, you know, rekindle all these moments that you may have felt like you lost.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I've experienced. Like, survivorship support is not as robust as diagnosis and treatment support. I likened it to like being dropped off the conveyor belt of cancer. There's really not much support. And when you think about it, how staggering it is to, me, I'm clear at this time. To, you know, you're sort of given a gift and you don't want to squander it. So I've been finding myself being a lot more present and a lot more content with what I have. But, you know, when I was going through treatment, I didn't have the opportunity to travel, but I did, go right after my diagnosis and my biopsy. I didn't have the results yet from my biopsy, but my best friend and I, we went on a trip to Iceland, and I remember telling the nurses and the doctors who were doing my biopsy that I was going to Iceland and I just wanted them to hold the results until I got back, just so that I could just go out there and experience it. It was really like recharging and healing and exciting and a reminder of how great and big the world is and how beautiful it is. So I didn't get a chance to travel during treatment, but I did spend some time in like a big nursery, like a plant nursery in my area, like just wandering through all the shrubs and the flowers. And I can't tell you how restorative that was for me. Yeah.
That's great. And I think that's part of it too, right? Being able to find those things that are restorative. So it may not be travel for you, but it was the nursery, right? It might just be, you know, someone getting back into crafting, sewing, or just journaling or writing. But it's like, again, it's like finding the things that bring you joy. What makes you so, like, what makes you smile? What feeds your soul? And there are those moments in there. So it's like, you know, maybe even to be able to relive those moments, it's when we do need to ask for help, because it might be the person, someone else that might be able to help you get to those moments. So, you know, it all comes together with that support, the type of support we're looking for, but also having those open, honest conversations that we may need a little bit more, or we're missing out on something that we once had. How can we bring it back? Or, you know, so it's lots of conversations that I think sometimes may not be thought about to have until you've actually gone through and like, you know what, this is something I might want to just start talking with people about, like, this is what makes me happy. This is what I like to do. Not that we're planning or hoping that a cancer diagnosis may come in our life, but if something was to happen, how can someone help me get through it?
Yeah. I have a colleague who, unfortunately, he's okay, but he went through like a sort of near death experience through like an accident, and we kind of bonded on the gift of like sort of a near death experience and how it sort of revitalizes you to reprioritize those things that bring you joy, which is something that are the first things that go when you're like a full-fledged adult with responsibilities. And, you know, like I said, I feel like my diagnosis was really crucial in me having a more enjoyable and fun rest of my life, but I'm working really hard to model that to my friends and my family and people that I work with, and really sort of insisting on people just taking time and taking breaks and recharging, and even small things like, not to sound ridiculous, but like my team this week, we're going to have a pizza party and just take a minute and say thank you to each other. But just acting in gratitude is something that didn't come really naturally to me. And now it's just something that I find so much joy and pleasure in, just being grateful. I think that so many of us would benefit from that perspective. It's just, it's probably the easiest thing to disregard when you have life happening outside of it. But sometimes, you know, having a diagnosis is really the thing that kicks you back to square one. And everything else falls by the wayside, and you see what's important, and you see the people who are important in front of you, and you just really have to take it while you have it.
Yeah, I love it. Like you said, whether it's a diagnosis or a near-death experience, for some, that's where that level of gratitude, or to even just rethink about like life, where you may have not thought of it in a certain way at one point.
Yeah. And for caretakers, again, like I can't stress to you enough how much I realized the impact on my husband, and the same things are applicable for caretakers as they are people going through the treatment. I mean, you feel like garbage, but other than that, it's just pretty much the same perspective, right? Like, it's the same fears, it's the same burden, it's the same everything. And yeah, I don't think there's enough done for caretakers. I don't think so. I participate in like the Susan G. Komen Walk, and I'm really happy with that organization and showcasing people who have gone through treatment, survivors and thrivers. But I also participated in a Relay for Life for American Cancer Association, and they have their own like table for survivors and their own table for caretakers, and they treat the caretakers in almost the same way. They get to wear a sash and do a lap. And I just remember seeing my husband doing the caretaker lap around the track and finally getting some recognition and honor for his services to me and his family. And it's really overlooked. And I think that they should just be bundled up in the same package of people who are going through it and caretakers, for sure.
Yeah. So one of our initial programs when we first started, because we did start in the beginning of the pandemic, so, you know, with COVID, but with our road trip to recovery, it was actually for the one of the person impacted by breast cancer, but their caretaker. And it was acknowledging the fact that, you know, we understand that this impacted someone else. So whether it was a significant other or, you know, caretaker that could have been a daughter, like we've had a mother-daughter duo, like the mom originally was a caretaker and then the daughter became the caretaker. You know, we just wanted them to also be included, so they received the same, you know, be able to go away, whatever the funds were for that trip. But it was essentially for the importance of that, again, this diagnosis impacts many people too at the same time. And kind of like what you said, it's like also now this is a whole new world of things that the caretaker might need to learn, but also, you know, is this caretaker now stopping their life to try to figure out how they can preserve what they already have, save another person's life? And that in itself, that mental toll becomes a lot. And kind of with the same for asking help, the caretaker might now be like, well, how do I ask help for help if I'm the one that's supposed to be helping the person that's impacted? So it does become a, you know, that whole thing of asking for support, but our mental health is impacting. So even sometimes, like you said, like even just being able to get that sash and acknowledgement of, like, you know, what you've done, like you went through the journey too, you went through the diagnosis too. Can we acknowledge and also support those who are supporting the ones who are being impacted? Because at the end of the day, whether it's a family or not, everyone is impacted. It's just different levels of it, of how that impact takes a toll on you.
So ladies, I've got a question I wanted to ask as to sort of wrap up this conversation. This has been amazing, by the way. I mean, Sam, I really appreciate you sharing your story, and Esther, the work that you do to honor and support the community is just amazing. And so I'm curious, like, if someone's listening, they've got breast cancer, or maybe they're a caretaker of someone that does, what advice would you have for them if they're feeling overwhelmed? Maybe they need to take a short break. What advice would you have for that?
I'll say from my end, like, just as in general, it ask for help, right? If anything, it may be scary, man, but ask for help, see what the resources are out there. But if you are maybe a caretaker, a loved one, a friend, ask, what can you do to support in that moment? Do you need rides to chemo? Do you need rides to your appointments? Do you need me to come to your appointments? Because maybe you may not be mentally okay in that moment. So let me write down all the questions and answers of what's being told. So when you go home, we process it together. Do you need food? Is there a community support that we can get a food line going and things, like what can we do to help decrease any additional stress that already is coming from this? And sometimes it may be obvious, other times it may not, but just having those conversations and figuring out like what additional support can I provide to you? And then also, you know, what support may you need trying to gather all this information? You know, the internet, there's so many stuff out there, all the things, but how can we also try to decrease the misinformation and, you know, going into that panic mode and going down a rabbit hole of all the things that are going to cure it in that moment? Like, how can we best be there to just help alleviate any type of additional stress?
I would just add, for someone who's facing a diagnosis and potentially their caretakers, I will say I never was a big person to meditate, but I found a lot of peace and energy through meditation this time around. I just said, this is all you got, so you might as well give it like an earnest go. And, you know, there are just some apps that have like 10-minute session that you just be still and you focus on your breathing. And I find a lot of peace through focusing on my breathing, especially when it comes to anxiety and racing thoughts and other sort of mental health things that you might encounter during difficult times. And really like reflecting on what you do have. I think a lot of us will focus on the hardship ahead of us, but just taking inventory, like I have said and we've discussed, I do have a robust support team, and how much people really do love me and depend on me and my children and their love and my friends and their love and my husband and love and family just reflecting back at me. Really, I don't know, I've said this before in interviews, but for some reason I never allowed myself to take that love in before my diagnosis, and it just felt sort of like a last ditch effort for me. How can you finally let yourself be loved? And it worked. And I find so much peace within myself now. And I know that, like, again, I'm really grateful that right now I'm not going through any medical tribulations. But if I did in the future, I know I would have the same. And I'm not as scared as I used to be, because really all we have is each other. And when you're aware of that, it you feel a little bit braver on a day-to-day basis.
That's a pretty good place to end. All we have is each other. And when you're aware of that, you can feel braver. I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you for your story. Esther, thank you for the work that you're doing. And thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Real Pink, a weekly podcast by Susan G. Komen. For more episodes, visit realpink.komen.org. And for more on breast cancer, visit komen.org. Make sure to check out @SusanGKomen on social media. I'm your host, Adam. You can find me on Twitter @AJWalker or on my blog, adamjwalker.com.